Good to see you all here. I'm excited that you're choosing to spend some time learning about boundaries. And I always like to start by giving some permissions and setting some ground rules just so everyone can feel comfortable here, because this is a very personal topic for a lot of people. And most likely, you're not just coming for some hypothetical information. Most likely, you have a certain person or situation in mind, or multiple ones that are bringing you here. So first, I like to give permission to ask questions. If the way I'm talking about something just doesn't make sense to you, or you think, like, how can that be right, or how can that be true? Or you take issue with anything, I invite you to share that. Because then that helps me to be a better teacher, because it shows me, like, oh, maybe I haven't thought that that would be a good thing to address as well. Or maybe I need to explain that in a slightly different way or a more thorough way. So that actually helps me a lot. So I invite that. I also set the ground rule of, if you want to share about a personal situation, that's absolutely fine. But also just giving the expectation that it's very hard for me to speak to specific situations in a big group like this. And if we were one-on-one in a counseling session, I would spend way more time with you. I'd be asking way more questions. So I probably won't be able to give you the most amazing answer. I may not be able to give you any answer, because sometimes there isn't, you know, just a nice, easy answer. But still, I do invite you to share if you do want to share any specifics. I also say if you want to talk about a situation that has to do with someone that you are here with, maybe ask their permission first before you share it. And people always laugh, but that actually happened. And it was a husband and wife, and I was just like, oh, and she did not look happy. And so I just was like, before I continue, can I ask, you know, your wife, how do you feel? And she's like, I'm really embarrassed right now. And she did, and he was like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, he just was kind of like, it was kind of ironic, because I was like, that was kind of a boundary violation. I didn't say it, but I was just like, okay. And so, so I'm like, I didn't think I'd have to say that. But if you're here with a spouse or a family member and you want to talk about something with them, maybe run it by them first, just to respect their privacy. But other than that, I'm, you know, going to be lecturing, but feel free to raise a hand at any point. And hopefully we'll have some fun. So when I say the word boundaries, or you hear that, what are some reactions you have, or what are some words that come to mind when you hear that? And you can just shout them out.
Do's and don'ts.
Do's and don'ts, okay. That's one way to think about boundaries, absolutely. Anything else?
Oversharing and undersharing.
So oversharing could be a sign of a lack of boundaries. Undersharing could be a sign of maybe too rigid boundaries. So, yeah, I've never heard someone address that, but yeah. What else? Hello, welcome. I just ask people what comes to mind when I say the word boundaries. So, just
parenting.
Did you say parenting?
I did.
That's awesome. Yes. Many people who've come to the seminar through the summer, they're thinking about their children. So, yeah, parenting, there's a lot of boundary setting in parenting. What else?
Limits.
Yes. It's another word for boundaries. Absolutely. Anything else?
Sometimes my wife and I have a different outlook on what is reasonable.
Yes.
And being on opposite sides of the coin occasionally drives both of us crazy.
Yes. So you might have an idea of, like, well, this is where we should draw the line. And she's like, no, we can draw the line over here. Is that kind of, yep, absolutely. So we'll talk about that. So they can be confusing. And people might have different ideas of what the boundaries should be and what they, you know, where they should be. So, yeah, they're not always black and white. They're not always super obvious. Yeah. Well, thank you. I like to ask that just to kind of get a sense for, like, how people are feeling in the room. No one really shared anything negative, but one week someone said restrictive, and I was like, thank you for being honest, you know, because I assume that there's probably some of you who don't feel super positive about boundaries all the time. And I actually, a woman came up to me and she was like, oh, I don't want to sign up for counseling, I just wanted to, and I'm going to different seminars, but I just wanted to comment on on boundaries because I've read all the books and I definitely grew up with that concept, but I experience people like using it like almost being too boundaried to where it's like they're cutting people off. And so she's like, I'm just being honest, when I heard you say boundaries, like I had this visceral reaction and I was like, yeah, that's real. And so I love that she was honest about that. And that's okay, because you have the reaction you have for a reason. So it's welcome here. So I want to start with, you know, defining boundary, because each one of us, you know, there's like maybe 15 of us in here, there may be 15 different definitions of what a boundary is. And so what it is, so these are some different ways to think about it. A boundary distinguishes one thing from another. If you think about a fence, you know, that distinguishes your property from your neighbor's property, right? So that's how you know where yours ends and theirs begins. Another way of thinking about boundaries is what is and what is not okay. So, and this is where it can get confusing, like you were sharing, because I might be okay with something that my family member or significant other is not. And I actually experienced this last week, and I was arguing with my boyfriend, and then I realized this is my boundary, not his. And it wasn't even about me, it was about him with his family. And I realized I was kind of imposing my boundary on him, and I was like, oh, well, he's okay with it. But each of us will have different ideas of what is and what is not okay. And so one step, and we'll talk more about this tomorrow, to setting boundaries is knowing for yourself what those things are. Another way of thinking about boundaries is that it's a way of having respect for yourself as well as respect for others. And as we talk more about it, I think that'll become more clear. It's saying I matter and other people matter. It's taking responsibility for your own life and letting other people take responsibility for theirs. And I know many of you probably are thinking about your children, and you know that can be trickier because little ones, they're not as responsible yet. And I've had a lot of parents come who are you know, their kids are teens or young adults, and so they need to be taking on more responsibility, but it's not always a smooth process, and I can understand why. I'm not a parent, so just being honest. I've spent a lot of time working with children and teenagers. My last job was working in a group home with foster youth, so I worked with very at-risk teenagers with a lot of emotional and behavioral problems. So you think I had to have some boundaries there? Just a little bit. So I say this as someone who has not had to experience that as a parent, but I see it and it makes perfect sense. But letting people take responsibility for their lives and their actions and their choices, but then also for ourselves, taking responsibility for our lives and our choices, and not, you know, not blaming, not making excuses, but just taking that responsibility. Another way of thinking about boundaries is it's something that keeps the good in and the bad out. So we don't want, again, we don't want boundaries to be so rigid that it keeps the good and the bad out, but we want it to keep the good in and the bad out. And that means that boundaries need to be discerning. That's why it's not just black and white, because maybe they need to shift based on different situations. Boundaries are letting your yes be yes and your no be no, just to use that biblical example. And it also might mean saying no to good things for the sake of focusing on more important good things. And, you know, if you're anything like me, I have a history of saying yes to too many good things because I like a lot of stuff. But then once I get into it, I don't even enjoy it because I'm so busy and I'm so stressed out and I'm thinking, while I'm at one place, I'm not even enjoying myself and I'm not even fully present because I'm thinking about, oh, well, I have to go do this thing now. And so sometimes boundaries also mean saying no to good things. So the metaphor I like to think of is that boundaries are like a fence with a gate that opens and closes. You can choose when you want to open it. You can choose when you want to close it. You can put a lock on it temporarily if you need to. But boundaries are not meant to be rigid brick walls that are impenetrable. They're supposed to be somewhat fluid. They're supposed to be somewhat movable. And they are should be able to change as life goes on, because situations morph, right? Like life, the only thing constant is change. And so I like to say that because a lot of times people avoid setting boundaries because they're like, I don't want to have to hold this line for the rest of my life. Like, and that's not, you don't have to do that. You can set a boundary for a certain situation, and then if the situation changes, if the person changes, if your schedule changes, then maybe you adjust it. So just have that image in your head that it's a fence, it's separating one thing from another, but it has a gate, you know, so things can come and go. So what boundaries are not? Boundaries are not division. And someone once said, you say it's not division, but then you use the metaphor of a fence, which literally divides things. And I'm like, very good point. So this is why I like when people like say stuff like that, because I'm like, thank you, you're helping me do a better job at this. The idea of boundaries, if they are used in a healthy way, it may be a temporary separation or a form of a separation for the purpose of greater closeness. And that's true definitely for our relationships. And I'll share some personal examples that'll kind of paint that picture a little better. But boundaries can definitely feel divisive. And that's usually where we have that maybe have that feeling of, this doesn't feel very loving. This feels like I'm pushing this person away. But again, tomorrow we'll talk more about like how do you decide. And I'll be giving you some different questions to think through that will help guide you in what boundaries to set and how. But at their heart, boundaries are not meant to be divisive or, again, to just separate for the sake of separating. It's separation or maybe what looks like division for the sake of greater health and closeness. Boundaries are not selfishness. I think a lot of people that I've talked to have a sense that it's selfish to say no, to not help whenever they're asked, to take care of themselves. That feels selfish maybe, and I'm going to show that it's not. And it's okay if you don't agree with that yet. I hope by the end you'll be like, okay, I can kind of see how that works. Boundaries are not meant to be an ultimatum or a way to manipulate or punish others. So it's not this like, oh, well, you're not giving me what I want, so I'm going to say, well, if you don't do this for me, then I'm going to blah, blah, blah. No, that's not a boundary. We don't use boundaries to manipulate people. We use boundaries to protect ourselves in an appropriate way and to actually guard our relationships. Boundaries are there to make our relationships healthier. So if you're using them to manipulate someone or to try to force someone, that is not an appropriate boundary. But people definitely do that. People use the word boundary like it's a bad word. You know, they use it, you know, in an inappropriate way. And a lot of times people will say, it's like if they use the word boundary, like, they're like on base, you can't get them. It's like, ha, I said boundary, you can't make me do anything. No, that's not what we're talking about here. So I'm just throwing all these things out as generalities, and we're going to unpack these a little more. And boundaries, they come up in our relationships, I'm sure you've experienced. They come up with how we choose to use our time and our energy and our resources. They come up in how we treat ourselves and other people. And we can set boundaries for ourselves just on our own, or we can set boundaries for ourselves with other people. And so some examples, because some people are really like, well, what does she mean by boundaries? You know, a way that we could set a boundary for ourselves is saying, you know, I need to get more sleep. I need to take better care of myself. I'm not doing good work when I go to work because I'm tired. I'm going to be in bed by 11 p.m., lights off, every night this week. So that's a boundary. You're saying, you know, I'm not going to stay up past this. So that's an example. And again, it's not, you're not doing that because you don't like having fun and you're a killjoy. You're doing it so that you'll be healthier and happier. You know, for those of us who are a part of a local church, serving in the church is so wonderful, and I know for me it has increased my faith and blessed me, helped me to build greater community. So I'm all for serving in the church. I was on staff at a church for 5 years, love the church, and also it's a great place to practice boundaries because there will always be a need. There will never not be a need in your church. There's always something more you could be doing, right? So a boundary you might set for yourself is, you know, I really love this ministry. Like I'm a worship leader, and so I'm on our worship team as a volunteer, but I lead once a month now. And so I just say, yeah, put once a month, I'm good. And sometimes twice. So that's where, again, it's not rigid, right? I'm like, feel free to ask me for the second one if you really need me, but you know, I'll let you know if I can or not. So just limiting, you know, I'm just going to serve in this ministry one or two times a month because I have a lot of other things. You know, I do want to kind of guard my weekends for my family, you know, so that might be a boundary you set. Kind of the most obvious one is not letting your kid run out into the busy street. That is a boundary. And I often say that because if people are like, but boundaries are bad and blah, when I say that, no one would say that that was bad. I hope not. And, you know, because if you saw a parent like watching their child run out onto a freeway and they were not concerned at all, if they're like, well, you know, they need to learn, they need to make their own decisions. No. Like that's, you can set a boundary there. You can go tackle that child. You know, that's okay. And so, yeah, and again, it's not because you don't want your kid to have any fun. It's because you don't want them to get killed or harmed. And if any of you have had kids and they have gone through the toddler stage, I'm sure there were times when your toddler got so mad at you for not letting them do something that was going to hurt them really badly. Or, you know, they always want to touch things that are like bad. Like, they want to touch the hot water. They want to touch the stove. And so it's like, as toddlers, they're just like, you're no fun, Mom, or you're no fun, Dad. You're ruining my life. But you know that it's because you love them, right? And so even though they're perceiving it as restrictive, you're mean, but the reality is I love you and I don't want you to hurt yourself. And I think that's kind of how God is with us. We might be like, well, why does God say this? Why can't I just do this? And he's like, because I love you. And I know how that's going to play out. So speaking of God, I like to spend a little time in scripture just kind of giving an apologetic for boundaries. So if you are, you know, I don't assume that I know the faith backgrounds, the church backgrounds that you all came from, but, you know, if you're raised in a family or a church that kind of poo-pooed boundaries or just kind of gave the message of, you know, you are here to give and give and give, and absolutely the Christian life is one of sacrifice. But I think it can get, that truth can get distorted a bit to the point to where people are, you know, giving out of compulsion, not out of the overflow of God's love within us. And so I like to look at scripture and say, well, yeah, what does God think about this topic? And if you read the Gospels, it's pretty clear that Jesus was not a people pleaser. He would not have ended up on the cross because he said things that people didn't like. He didn't do what everyone asked him to do. He was totally focused on his mission. You know, he came to teach and heal, but he ultimately knew, I'm here to be the lamb, the sacrificial lamb for all of humanity. And so that meant he had to say no to some things. So, you know, when he'd go to a new town and he's healing and teaching, people are like, this is great. We have our own healer. Let's keep him forever and no one will ever be sick again. People would want him to stay, but he would leave because he said, you know, I need to go to this other town now. I need to preach the good news here now. So he would leave, and I'm sure those people were disappointed. He also would not stay in a town and continue teaching and healing if people were not open to him. So he didn't like grab them and shake them and say, I'm going to stay here till you believe me. He said, okay, you guys aren't open. I'm going to move on. He also, in Luke 5, it talks about how these great crowds would gather to hear him because, you know, his name was getting out there. But he would withdraw It says he would withdraw to desolate places to pray. And he did that a few times. There are times when he was asleep, like when all the disciples were on a boat and they thought they were going to die, like, Jesus is asleep. Like, he's chilling. Because he was probably really tired. He was working really hard. And so I love that even though this need was so great, and he could have been healing and teaching 24/7, and there would still probably be more people. But he knew he needed to get away. He needed to pray. The Father was his source of strength. And so he knew he needed to get back with the Father to renew his strength, to rest, because he was human, you know? He was fully God, but also fully man. So he had those limitations. He couldn't just stay awake for a week straight. So Jesus said no to people. He took care of himself. And also, so in the Old Testament, God also defines himself as separate and distinct from others. You know, holy literally just means set apart. And God defines himself as holy, and he instructs Israel, be holy for I am holy. He tells Israel, be set apart from the nations around you, the nations that, you know, worship other idols and have practices that are not in line with what I say is right and good. The Ten Commandments, those are boundaries. That's God telling us what he's okay with and what he's not okay with. He sets boundaries for relationships in Genesis. It talks about how man must leave his father and mother and cling to his wife. So God sets that, yeah, as someone gets older, when they get married, you know, their family shifts. There's a new dynamic there. So God sets that. God also holds boundaries with his people, with Israel. He told them, you know, these are the consequences of your behavior, and he followed through. In Deuteronomy 11, there's this whole passage. It's often, the heading is often blessings and curses. Because he says, you know, if you do these things, if you worship me, if you say that I am your God and there's no other, you know, it's going to go well for you. You're going to be blessed. But if you turn from me and worship these other gods, these false idols, you know, there's going to be curses on you. And it does play out that way. And God is incredibly patient, and he waits for like hundreds and hundreds of years to finally be like, okay. So, he's way more patient than I would ever be. I think any of us would ever be. But he does follow through, and Israel does go into exile. So he does tell them, you know, here are your options. You choose. And God definitely, he's not okay with everything. You know, he loves humanity, but he definitely tells us what's not cool. So that leads me to think that, you know, God is okay with no to some things. And that Jesus, you know, the fact that Jesus is what we're supposed to model our life after, the fact that he didn't do whatever was asked of him, then maybe it's okay for us to do that too. So I talked about how boundaries are not selfishness. So to illustrate this, I like to ask people to think about a time when someone asked you to do something that you really didn't want to do, but you felt obligated, so you said yes. So get a situation in your mind. Or if there's never been a time like that, wow, lucky you. But maybe imagine what that would be like. And then how do you feel towards that person afterwards or during? And you can just say it.
Resentful.
Resentful, yeah. Anything else? Yeah, you might kind of want to avoid them in the future, right? Because they're like, I don't want them to ask me anything. If you're walking through church like this, that might be a sign that you need to set some boundaries. But yeah, resentful, absolutely. That's an avoidant. I think that's the key emotion, that when we don't set boundaries with people and we're just trying to be everything to everyone, often the result is resentment. And then what does that do to our relationship with that person? Does it make it better? No. Yeah, it makes you want to avoid them and run away from them. Or it just makes you, it hardens your heart towards them. So it's hard to love them the way Jesus would when you're resentful of someone. So that's one reason why it's not selfish, because my friends who I know have good boundaries, I feel so safe and comfortable with them, because if I need something, I know if I go and ask them and they say yes, it's because they really can and they really want to. Or even if they don't really want to, they have a sense of like, it's not out of obligation. It's out of love for me. And if it is sacrificial, it's loving sacrifice. And so I feel comfortable asking. And then when they say no, I'll be like, thank you for saying no, because I know that you're, you know, not lying to me or you're being honest. The people who say no to me when they really can't do something are the people I actually feel the most comfortable with. Because I don't have to worry about, oh, are they really okay with this? And if you think someone's kind of mad at you, I think that's like the worst feeling in the world. I hate when people are mad at me. But, you know, sometimes we have to get over that. But again, boundaries, that's what I mean when I say they guard our relationships. And they keep us from harboring anger and resentment in that way. Also, so in that way, having boundaries actually leads to being more compassionate and caring towards others, because we're able to give from that full, I like the metaphor of that full cup, you know, that God is my source and he fills me with his love and energy and grace for others. And then I can give that to everyone else. But if I'm giving so much that I never have time to refill my own cup, you know, I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel, and that doesn't really, that's not the good stuff. And so also me having some boundaries around what I do and don't do, what I'm okay with and not okay with, that allows me to really give my best self. I have boundaries around my time, you know, with my clients. If I just see 10 people in a row, those 8th, 9th, 10th clients, they are not getting the best of me. And that's not fair to them. They're paying the same amount as my first client of the day. So I need to set some boundaries and maybe say no to some clients or, say, I know that this is the one time that works for you, but I gotta take a break. And it's not because I'm a jerk. It's not because I don't care about my clients. It's because I want to give my best self to them. And if I haven't eaten in 8 hours or, you know, I've just been sitting for 8 hours, I don't function as well. There's also the metaphor of the oxygen mask. I was just on a plane this last week, so I always laugh whenever they do the oxygen mask. And I was like in the exit row, so she put the oxygen mask right above me and dropped it, and I was like, ooh, it was a little aggressive. But, you know, when you fly and they say, please, like, if you're traveling with a child or someone who needs assistance, put on your own oxygen mask first, then assist them. Why do they instruct you to do that? Yes. you can't help anyone when you're dead or unconscious. You'd go unconscious first, and then eventually you'd die. I know, very, very happy thoughts here. Exactly. So you're no good to anyone if you are incapacitated. And that's very literal, that example. But in other ways, if I am just spiritually dead, if I am dry, if I am exhausted because I haven't slept a full night in 2 weeks, where I haven't had any breaks from work and serving and helping people, I will collapse. I will be done. And then I won't be any good to anyone else. So on days when I do, you know, everyone throws around self-care, which it's a relatively new thing that people are adopting, which is great. I think, again, people can take that to an extreme and use that in a way that's not really appropriate or healthy. But in its purest form, self-care is actually selfless because, you know, for you as parents, I usually tell couples, you know, it is not selfish for you to nurture your marriage before spending time with your kids, because if you have a healthy, strong, beautiful marriage, that is one of the best gifts you can give to your children. It's not selfish at all. So I've actually told parents, yeah, don't hang out with your kid. Hang out with each other. Like, if you haven't seen your spouse, like really seen them in weeks, yeah, that's okay. So put on your own oxygen mask first. If you're drowning, that's not a good place to be to help others. You can't be someone else's anchor if you're drowning, right? So another way of describing boundaries that I kind of hinted on was, what is my responsibility and what is not? And again, this is where that line can get a little fuzzy at times. So I say all of this knowing it's so easy to talk about this in theory, but I know as you guys start, you know, if you were to share specifically the issues in your lives, it'd be like, yeah, it's not that black and white. So please know that I'm not like, well, you just do these five steps and your life's great. No, that's like never a thing. Very rarely is that a thing. Life is so much more complicated. But these are just more of concepts for you to hold to help you navigate a little better. So this is from the book Boundaries by Cloud and Townsend, which I'm really basing a lot of what I'm teaching off of that book. And if you've never read it and you want more, I highly recommend it. Something you can read on your own time. But they say kind of one of their mantras is poor planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part. So, ooh, yeah, that's the money phrase. So I'll say it again. Poor planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part. And so that's something that I constantly say to myself to help me distinguish, well, what is my responsibility and what is not? Is this person in trouble because they have not taken responsibility for their own life in a way that is appropriate? Or are they in this trouble because something that's totally outside of their control came in like a wrecking ball and smashed things to bits? So the way I respond is going to be very different. If it's because, you know, I was like the good student in high school, and I always, okay, hopefully this isn't too racy, but I always sat next to like the stoners who like never paid attention to anything. I went to public school. And so like I would get all the instructions, and I was like the kid who would just start doing their homework when the teacher was still talking, because I was like, I want to be done with my homework. I don't want to do it when I'm home. And I'd be in the middle of my homework, and then the stoner would like wake up and take off his hood and be like, what are we doing right now? And oh, it made me so angry. But I, you know, I was 15 and wanted people to like me. So I wish I'd been like, dude, like, sounds like a personal problem. I'm good. Like, or even just being like, hey, let me finish my assignment. Then I'll help you, you know? But yeah, so that's an example of, you know, that student wasn't taking responsibility for their own education. They were sleeping and then thinking, oh, well, Ariana is always paying attention, so I'll just ask her later. So that's an example where it might have been appropriate for me to be like, hey, dude, like, I don't have time right now, sorry. I got to get my own stuff done. So, but if it's like my friend has been out of school for 2 weeks because they had pneumonia, yeah, of course I'm going to help them, right? It's not their fault. So our responsibility are our feelings, our choices, and our lives. And this is a quote from the book. It says, a common boundary problem is disowning our choices and trying to lay responsibility for them on someone else. We need to realize that we are in control of our choices, no matter how we feel. We have been so trained by others on what we should do that we think we're being loving when we do things out of compulsion. So that goes back to that resentment. If you're resenting someone because they keep asking you to do things you don't want to do, it's when you break it down, it's like, well, who chose to say yes? Me. So is it fair for me to be angry at them? Not really. I still am. You know, feelings aren't always rational, right? If they were, the world would be a very different place. But see how we can break down, well, whose responsibility is this? Who's responsible for what's happening in my life right now? Is it me? If it is, then maybe I need to, you know, not target my anger and frustration on other people. Maybe I need to take responsibility and say, oh, well, I'm the one who said yes to this, and I could have said no. So it really changes the way you feel towards people. I had an experience in the spring where it was my boyfriend's 30th birthday, and so we rented a big house up north on the coast, and people all came and stayed and had a birthday party, and the night after the party, I was really tired. I'm slightly introverted, even though I'm up here right now, and I met like 50 new people that weekend, so I was like, I need to go to sleep, and a bunch of people stayed. There's a hot tub, so they stayed up in the hot tub. And it was loud, and I could hear them, but I was like, oh, it'll wind down. And it did not. It went on for like 3 more hours. And it was daylight savings time was starting. So it was actually technically 4 in the morning. And I was mad. I was like, those jerks, like, they're so like, blah, blah, blah. But then I had to stop and say, like, wait, is it fair for me to be angry at them? Do they have any idea that I can't sleep and that I can hear everything? No, because I haven't told them. And so that helped so much, because rather than going down there and opening the door and being like, hey, jerk faces, shut up, you know, like, instead of doing that, I went down, and what was great was the second my boyfriend saw me, he was like, are we being too loud? Like, he was so aware. And I said, yeah, I can actually, you know, I have all the windows closed, but I can still hear you guys, and I haven't been able to sleep. And they felt really bad, and my boyfriend felt so bad, and like, he eventually came inside, and he was like, I'm so sorry, like, he felt so bad, but I was able to say, you know what, I am upset because I'm exhausted, but it's not your fault. It's my fault. I didn't go down and tell you sooner. And so I was still frustrated and upset, but I didn't shoot my anger cannons at him. And so that could have gone very differently, right? I could have been like, you are so inconsiderate. How dare you not read my mind? You know, like, which, yeah, if you've ever been in a relationship, that you've at least had one of those fights, right? Maybe 5,000 of them. I don't know. So again, this is a way I'm just trying to illustrate why knowing what's your responsibility and what's not, it can give you so much freedom and peace. And it was so much easier for me to let go of my anger, because it was like, well, it was my fault. And I'm like, well, this really sucks. And now it's 4 a.m. and I'm just getting to sleep. But at least me and my boyfriend aren't in a big fight at 4 in the morning. That would have been way worse. So now I want to quickly talk about kind of the common boundary problems. And these are all from the Cloud and Townsend book. I can't take credit for them. They came up with them. But as we go through them, you might find yourself in one or more categories. So you can be in more than one. So the first type of boundary problem is when someone is compliant. And this is someone who says yes to everything. So they say yes to the good and to the bad. And there's a lot of reasons why we do this. There's a lot of reasons why we say yes to things that we don't want to. It could be a fear of rejection or abandonment. You know, maybe we have a friend or a relationship where they don't treat us super great, but I've talked to so many women who stay with guys who don't treat them well because they think that there's no one else out there for them, and they don't want to lose the one person that they do have, and it breaks my heart, because I'm like, yes, there is someone else out there, and I can say that because I believed that too, but we just get so scared, or even with friendships. I had friends in high school and college that were so, they did not stand up for me, they didn't care for me, but I just thought, well, like, there's no one else, so I'm just gonna put up with it. So there's a reason why we put up with things that we don't want to. Some of us don't even know that saying no is possible, because we didn't grow up in a home or an environment that did that. Maybe you tried to set a boundary and your parents punished you for it. You know, maybe if, you know, physical sexual abuse, that's like the most extreme example of a boundary violation. So people who grew up in abusive homes or even verbal abuse, that's a boundary violation. If you grew up in that kind of environment, you learned that you can't set boundaries. If you try to protect yourself and set boundaries, there's punishment for that. We maybe don't want to hurt people's feelings or make them mad. That happens a lot. Like, no one wants to hurt people's feelings. Well, maybe they do, but I'd say at our core, no one's like, yeah, I'm gonna disappoint that person so much, awesome. And like I said, I hate when people are mad at me. And that's a big reason why I didn't set boundaries for a long time. I didn't want people to be mad at me. I've gotten way more comfortable with that, especially, like I said, I worked with foster youth. They were mad at me all the time, like for things that weren't even my fault. So I just got really comfortable of like being yelled at. I'd just be like, okay, tell me, what else are you mad about? Yeah, just bring it all. And it was okay, because in my heart I had that boundary of this is not about me. So that's why I could take their anger, because I knew it wasn't about me. But something that I came up with when I was learning to set some boundaries, and I had a family member who got really, really mad at me when I set a boundary, which I still believe was appropriate and healthy, is that just because someone is mad at you does not necessarily mean that you've done something wrong. Going back to the toddler example, you know, your toddler might get so mad at you that you're not letting them play with the kitchen knife. Just because your toddler's mad at you, is that wrong of you? No. So that's, very obvious example, but that goes into our adult lives. A lot of times people get mad at us when we set boundaries because they're the ones benefiting from us not having boundaries. So again, going back to the high school and the kid who's sleeping, waking up and saying, oh, what are we supposed to be doing right now? Or do you have the homework from yesterday? Can I copy it? If I was like, no, dude, sorry, he would probably get mad at me. He maybe would have called me names or been like, what's your problem? Why are you so not chill? But he's mad because he had this great thing going, right? He never had to do his homework or pay attention, and he still passed the class, and now I'm not letting him do that anymore, and so he's mad. It's not because I'm doing anything wrong. It's because he had a really great deal, and now he doesn't get to do that anymore. So just because someone is mad at you does not necessarily mean you did something wrong. A lot of times people get mad at you for doing the right thing. And I would say that to my staff at the group home. I'd be like, oh, if they're mad at you, that means you're doing your job right. You know, in some cases, sometimes kids were mad for very valid reasons and staff needed to be talked to. But it was like dangerous when you came into work and a kid was like, yay, you're here, you're my favorite. It's like, ooh, nope. It's because that's the staff that lets them do whatever they want and they're not good. It's not a good staff. Like we said, we maybe don't say no to things because it feels mean or selfish. And we don't want to be seen that way. We're used to taking responsibility for things we're not responsible for, like other people's choices and feelings. And again, this is really tricky with children, especially as they're getting older, because you're so used to taking responsibility for them. When they're little, like, you do have to be responsible for most of their life. But as they get older, we're supposed to back away a little more, but it's not always super clean cut when and how you do that. So maybe it's because you're just so used to always filling that gap for someone. So those are lots of reasons why we might be compliant. And some signs that you might be compliant, like we talked about, is if you have resentment towards people. If you're feeling tired all the time, if you have a lot of stress and anxiety, if you're dreading people or social events, remember, if you're walking through church with your jacket over your head, or you're just like, gotta go, bye, you don't want to talk to people because you're afraid of being asked to do more things. If you're people-pleasing, which is doing something that you have no desire to do, or that could actually be detrimental to you, just to make sure that no one gets mad at you, that's people-pleasing, and that's a sign of being compliant. or also, trying to make everyone happy so you make no one happy. That's often really common with people who are compliant, and I had a friend who did that, and it was hurtful. I was visiting her in L.A., and I was like, I was in San Diego at the time, and I like drove the 2 hours through traffic to hang out with her. And every time her phone rang, she answered it. And, you know, it wasn't just like I'm actually with someone, I'll call you back later. She would like have a 5-10 minute conversation. And they'd be asking for something, and she'd be like, oh, yeah, let me tell you how to do that, and blah, 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 blah. And after like 5 phone calls, I was just kind of like, we couldn't have a conversation because it kept getting interrupted. Our time wasn't quality. And so I just kind of started shutting down. And in her mind, you know, she couldn't say no to anything. And so, you know, no one was really getting the best. And this is another quote from the book. It says, God wants us to be compliant from the inside out, which is compassion, not compliant on the outside and resentful on the inside. And a lot of times, that's how it ends up being, and we think that we're being godly and loving, but if you have resentment in your heart, it's really hard to be loving. And so much of setting boundaries is that self-awareness and also that honesty with ourselves. And to know that even if you are resentful, you know, it's okay, like God still loves you, but we need to acknowledge that and take responsibility. Like my example with being kept up till 4 a.m, me taking responsibility for that set me free from my anger and resentment. So on the other end of the spectrum, we have avoidance. So these are people who say no to everything. So they say no to the bad, but they also say no to the good. And this is where the boundary might be a wall, and this is where that woman I talked about who told me, I've had people use the word boundary, but then it's actually just really painful because they're not willing to help even when it's like pretty reasonable, like I broke my leg or, you know, my kids are all sick. And so these are people who say no to kind of everything. They don't ask for help at the same time. So that can be really hard. Sometimes people are compliant and avoidant, so they'll help everyone else, but then they'll say no to help. And so that's a really hard place to be because it's very isolating and you're giving, 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 but no one's ever giving into you. And so often those two will go hand in hand. So they'll have really rigid boundaries with themselves, but not with anyone else. And this is also, you know, there's a difference between, we're talking about responsibility, there's a difference between being responsible for someone and being responsible to them. So all of us are responsible to certain people in our lives. You're responsible to your spouse, or your significant other, to your children, to your boss. You know, there's certain expectations that you need to fill. But being responsible for someone, that we are not responsible for people. I'm not responsible for, you know, someone else's choice. I can absolutely go and say, hey, I think this would be the best idea. But at the end of the day, they're the ones who make the choice. Even if I give, someone gives you advice and you follow it and it doesn't go well, like you can say like, yeah, that advice didn't really work. But at the end of the day, you're the one who chose to take that advice. And so that's what I mean when I say there's a difference between the two. And so sometimes people who are avoidant, and then also another category is non-responsive. And these are people who just don't even hear the needs of others at all. And they're just kind of like, well, I'm not responsible for you. So they'll use that as their excuse. But yeah, we're not responsible for people, their feelings and choices, but we are responsible to people. So you don't get to just say, well, this is my boundary and no one can expect anything of you. No, like you do have some responsibilities to people. Does that make sense, the difference there? Okay. I'm still figuring that out, honestly. I've been like mulling over that for months and I'm still like, wait, is this two or four? Like, I don't know. So it's a process, so have grace on yourselves, please. So I've talked about compliance, avoidance, non-responsives, which are a little different from avoidant, because it's like they're just not even, like they have, you know, headphones in and they're oblivious. And then we have controllers. And these are people who have a hard time respecting other people's boundaries. So they don't hear the no. So a lot of what I've talked about is us being able to set boundaries. But also, we can have boundary violations by not respecting other people's boundaries. And sometimes, again, you can be a compliant and a controller because you want to be so helpful that you start helping people who don't even want your help. Or maybe you're helping in a way that actually makes things more difficult for them. So a question to ask yourself is, am I wanting to help for this person's sake or for myself? And just to be really honest, I used to help people out of a sense of selfishness because it was a source of my own self-worth. If I could be helpful to someone or people needed me, people can't leave you if they need you, right? It's another reason why people stay in really bad relationships, because they're like, well, they need me, so at least they'll never leave me. But that's not love. If that's my motivation for helping people, that's not the heart of Jesus. Jesus helping us didn't do anything for him, like other than the joy of knowing that we could have connection with God, which is pretty great. But so a lot of times, and especially women in the church, I'm sure this happens for men too, but for women, it's like the more giving you are, the more sacrificial you are, the more highly you are elevated. And so sometimes it's so subtle, but we can be helping and serving out of those selfish ulterior motives of just wanting to be recognized, wanting to feel good about ourselves. And it's okay to feel good when you're helping. Like I feel so purposeful and so full of joy when I lead worship on a Sunday. And even if no one gives me positive feedback, I still am happy. When people are like, thank you for leading us in worship, like, my heart needed that. I'm like, praise God. It gives me joy. But I don't lead worship because I like people complimenting me. I do it because it brings me joy. And I believe that God has given me some gifts in that. So a lot of times if our identity is based in how helpful we can be to others or others needing us, we might overstep some bounds because we're like, well, this person's not letting me help them, so I can't get any self-esteem, so I'm really uncomfortable, so I'm just going to ignore that they said no, and I'm going to help them anyway. And usually how this plays out is people get mad at you, they resent you. My stepmother is a little bit like this, and it's good. We've had some talks about it, and she's my parents are on the older side, so they're becoming more limited. And I was actually down there because my dad was recovering from a surgery, and I told her, I know you really like to take care of me, but I would be so honored if you would let me help you. And she let me, but for years when I'd go visit, anytime I got up to like just get a glass of water, she'd be like, what do you need? I got it for you. But then she would like take so much longer, you know, because she's old. And while I was down there, I was asking, do you have any ibuprofen? Like, I was really sore from a run. And she's like, oh yeah, what do you need it for? Are you okay? Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm fine. Like, so, and I'm 31 years old and I live by myself. Like, I can survive, like I'm okay. But she just needed to be in control of my care while I'm there. And so she would go, she was like, oh, I'll get it for you. And I was like, she's gonna forget. And she went upstairs and started doing something else. And sure enough, it's been like 15 minutes. So I just went upstairs and got the ibuprofen and came down. And then like an hour later, she came down with it and was like, here's your ibuprofen. I was like, so again, she's trying to be helpful, but it's not actually helpful. You hear what I'm saying? Like, bless her. But it would have been way more helpful if she just said, yeah, the ibuprofen is in my cabinet on the left, blah, blah, blah. Great, thank you so much. But she wanted to go above and beyond what I was asking. And this is a painful, when I realized that I had this tendency that I was trying to help people, and honestly, I started my journey to my current career out of that place of brokenness, because it made me feel really good about myself when people told me their problems and said, oh, I feel so much better, you're so helpful. That, like, fed my ego. And so part of my training as a therapist was beating that out of me, because that's not appropriate. So, of course, like, it makes me happy when my clients are getting better and learning and growing. I think it's awesome, but if my identity and my confidence as a therapist is wrapped up in my client's improvement, that's not good, because then I'm going to start, you know, needing them to get better so that I feel better about myself. And that's not what I'm here for. I'm here for them. They're not here for me. And so if any of this is connecting with you, I ask you to have grace on yourself. Things like this, they slip in so subtly. It's not like you went out there thinking, I'm going to be really selfish and have lots of insecurities, and so I'm going to use other people to fill that. No, of course not. But it's this subtle thing that slips in. So if you are gaining some awareness, I invite you to bring that to the Lord and just to acknowledge it. A lot of times, if we are a controller, we'll get mad when we're not appreciated. But then the tricky thing is we do things for others that they don't even want. So, you know, if I didn't thank my stepmom for something that I didn't even want, you know, like the stereotype, like in my big fat Greek wedding where, you know, the mom's like, oh, are you hungry? And he's like, oh, no, I'm fine. And she's like, okay, I fix you something. It's like, and then someone brings you food and you're not hungry and you don't eat it. And they're like, why aren't you eating? It's like, I didn't even want this. Like, why are you mad at me? So that's the more lighter version of it. So we've talked through a lot, and we have a few more minutes, and I always like to close with a song that I think really pulls a lot of this together, and to have you listen to the song kind of through that lens of what are some boundary issues, to just see if, you know, to kind of quiz your brain and see if you've picked up on any of this. But before I do that, I talked a lot. And I'm not used to talking this much. In counseling, I'm like pretty quiet. But are there any reactions or questions following up on anything I said? Because I kind of just had you all drink from a fire hose. Yes?
I've got a question.
Yes.
So in setting the boundaries, I imagine you gotta, like say with a couple or with a family, you gotta mm-hmm. find out from each person. I imagine you each have to take your, figure out what each person's boundaries needed to be and find out what works for everyone, or how would you do that?
Yeah, well tomorrow, I can answer that a little bit, but tomorrow we'll definitely go more in detail with, okay, how do we actually do this? Sometimes a boundary is a unilateral decision. It's like that person doesn't have to agree. Because remember, sometimes the people who don't want you to have boundaries, it's because they're benefiting from it, right? But sometimes, yeah, it is a conversation. I'd say it depends on the situation. When it comes with parents setting boundaries with their kids, it's going to be a lot easier if parents are on the same page. And if you're like, yes, we can both enforce this. So in that case, yes, like needs to be a joint decision. But sometimes depending on the situation, it's not a conversation. You know, I've set boundaries where I'm like, I know you don't like this, but if this happens, I have to leave because I don't feel safe in this situation. So I didn't need to get the other person's approval for that. But again, we don't do it out of spite or manipulation. So I don't know if that answers it a little bit for you. Okay. Yeah, but that's a very good question. And again, yeah, don't use the word boundaries as a weapon against your spouse or against your parent. We don't do it. When I had to set some boundaries with my dad years ago, and which did result, it was initial separation for greater closeness. Like, I feel so much closer to my father than I ever have, and he thanks me now for setting those boundaries. He was so mad at me when I set them, but now he says, that's what I needed, and I'm so thankful you did that. I didn't need to get his approval on that, but I wasn't doing it because I'm like, well, you hurt me, so I'm going to hurt you. I did it because I knew that was going to be the best thing for our relationship. So it did come from a place of love. And we'll talk about that tomorrow as well and how to kind of discern. So I want to play this song, and I know that it's kind of near the end. So if you need to slip out, please do. And this is if the internet works. It may not, so then maybe this is the Lord telling me. No. Okay, well, it is 12:15, so maybe if you come tomorrow, I will start our day with this song, since I want to respect your time, because that's a boundary, right? But thank you so much. If you're not going to be here tomorrow, that's absolutely fine. Thank you for coming, and I look forward to maybe seeing some of you again tomorrow. And I'm here if you want to ask questions.